This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, July 29th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Colorado advocacy organizations are calling on senators to pass President Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan to fund programs to address crises in local communities. Denver has been experiencing record-breaking temperatures this summer, and its layout may be aggravating the heat index. We'll hear from a geoscientist about the urban heat island phenomenon. And looking for a safe, well-ventilated way to enjoy the performing arts in person? We'll hear about an event happening tonight at the Boulder Band Shell. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then KGNU's Liz Lane shares a conversation with radio host Sonali Kohatkar at 9 a.m. on this morning's A Public Affair. KGNU's Claudia Cragg speaks with Steph M. Schuster about trans medicine in light of political moves in Arkansas and other states to enact new legislation restricting medical treatments for transgender patients. Then at 9:30, an eclectic mix of music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. But first, we'll start with the headlines with Stacey Johnson.
Boulder County announced yesterday that Denver Water's land use application for the Gross Reservoir Expansion Project is now on hold. That means public hearings scheduled for August and September have been canceled. It's the latest action in an ongoing legal dispute over the reservoir. Per the county's press release, Denver Water in September of 2020 submitted to Boulder County the project's land use application as required under the 1974 House Bill 1041 legislation called the Areas and Activities of State Interest Act. According to the county, the act allows local governments to regulate a variety of development activities with guidance from the state, and development would only proceed if there are consistencies with a local community's 1041 regulation. Denver Water is accusing Boulder County of using the 1041 permitting process as a delay tactic. The water provider further argues that there is publicly stated opposition by two of the three county commissioners. Congressman Joe Neguse, chair of the U.S. Subcommittee on National Parks, Forests, and Public Lands, passed an amendment on Tuesday increasing funding for fire preparedness and other fire-related activities. Steve Miller has more.
On Tuesday, Congressman Joe Neguse, chair of the U.S. Subcommittee on National Parks, Forests, and Public Lands, passed an amendment that increases funding for wildfire management accounts at the Department of Interior and the U.S. Department of Agriculture to support fire preparedness and suppression, fire science and research, emergency rehabilitation, and rural fire assistance. The appropriations bill asks for $385,000 for wildfire risk reduction efforts in Jefferson County. A final vote on the bill is expected later this week. Congressman Neguse feels that after the record-setting 2020 wildfire season, it is crucial to provide federal funding to support wildland fire suppression and help families recover in communities across the West. And today, wildfire smoke is expected to enhance ozone concentrations across northern Teller and northwestern El Paso counties. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has issued an air quality health advisory expected to reach the unhealthy for sensitive groups category for cities that includes Woodland Park, Florissant, Colorado Springs, Manitou Springs, and Monument. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The CDC's national eviction moratorium is set to end Saturday, July 31st. Housing rights activists warn this will trigger a new wave of homelessness, especially in urban areas. The Colorado Sun reports the state's Emergency Rental Assistance Program, or ERAP, has been delayed due to fraud prevention efforts. A spokesman for the Department of Local Affairs did not elaborate on the extent of the fraud or when payments for approved accounts will be issued. According to the Colorado Sun, the state's program has been overwhelmed during the pandemic, contributing to extreme delays for renters seeking assistance. The University of Colorado Health System and Denver Health announced Wednesday they will require their employees to be vaccinated for COVID-19 by fall. This comes on the heels of Banner Health, which operates 4 hospitals in Colorado, announced its requirement last week. According to the Colorado Sun, Colorado's other hospital systems, Centura Health, Health One, and SCL, have not issued a mandate, but their situations may change when the FDA gives full approval for the coronavirus vaccines, which is expected in the coming weeks. Governor Jared Polis, Boulder Mayor Sam Weaver, and other community leaders toured the new permanent location of the Boulder Strong Resource Center located at 2935 Baseline Road in Boulder Wednesday. The center, open Monday through Saturday, provides many free services, including counseling, therapy dogs, acupuncture, and massage to anyone affected by the March 22nd King Soopers mass shooting. According to the center's personnel, the resource center also provides a safe haven for those impacted to create art and to be with others who experienced the tragedy. A power outage in West Denver impacted about 6,000 people on Wednesday evening. According to the Denver Post, the outage began around 6 p.m. near the intersection of West Colfax Avenue and Federal Boulevard. An Xcel company spokesperson says a piece of damaged equipment caused the outage. Today's forecast by the National Weather Service is sunny with a high near 94. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low around 65. Temperature at the Boulder Studios is currently 72 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. A diverse coalition of Colorado's advocacy organizations rallied yesterday outside of Senator John Hickenlooper's office in downtown Denver, urging him and Senator Michael Bennett to take immediate federal action on a wide range of crises, including health care, immigration, climate, housing, employment, and small business assistance. The organizations publicly support President Joe Biden's so-called Build Back Better plan, saying it presents solutions by investing hundreds of millions of dollars in addressing those issues affecting local communities. While representatives from the AFL-CIO, Progress Now Colorado, Hunger Free Colorado, Colorado Consumer Health Initiative, and more went inside to meet with the senator's staff, KGNU's Dave Ashton caught up with several other organizers to share their perspectives.
Be bold!
Be bold!
Be bold!
Be
bold!
This is State Representative Monica Duran for House District 24, which encompasses Edgewater, Wheat Ridge, and Golden.
Representative Duran, you're the lead here today on this call to action to be bold. What made you decide that you wanted to get out here and rally with all of these organizations?
You know, I think it's so important because all of us, at one time or another in our lives, have been reliant upon our home care workers, right, to take care of a family member, either my brother, sister, or parents. And I think, especially through the pandemic, we have seen how unprotected they are. They don't even make a living wage or have health care, and just how important it is that we take care of them. So I have been committed since I've been elected to make sure their voices are heard and making sure that our senators, Senator Hickenlooper and Senator Bennett, hear what we're saying here today.
It seems like a really important time to elevate the voice of working Americans who are really just kind of on the edge at peril of losing everything that they've worked for.
Absolutely. You're right, because this is nothing new. The pandemic has really shown just how hard it is to pay your rent, buy groceries, deciding what bills you're going to pay. You know, as a once homeless single mother, I know those struggles. But those struggles are still happening, and our home care workers and many workers are still out there working 2 or 3 jobs to try to make ends meet, and we need to do better by them.
So what are some of the opportunities that the passage of this portion of the Rebuilding America, you know, series of bills before Congress, what are some of the things that can happen or change?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's going to let our workers know that they matter and they're important. And the struggles they've been going through, we acknowledge them. And because of that, we are going to help and make sure that you have a living wage. You can unionize. We're going to make sure that we show you the respect and dignity that you deserve, because a lot of them are out there taking care of everybody else, but no one's taking care of them. and this Be Bold package and having our senators support this and fight for this lets them know you matter, you care, we're here for you.
I am Charmaine Phillips. I am a home health care worker and a leader with CC Wu.
Charmaine, your remarks were really moving. You were talking about just the struggle to keep a roof over your head. 16-hour days.
Yes, 16-hour days, 7 days a week. Bit of a struggle. It's almost impossible to work that much, but you got to do what you got to do.
Where do you find the stamina?
I just don't think about it and just keep moving forward. That's my motto. I know that things get hard, but the only way to do anything about it is forward movement.
On top of working 16-hour days, you're finding time to, like, get organized and come out here and represent. So, like, who are you representing?
I am representing all care workers, all essential workers, and frontline workers. We are definitely essential.
What do you hope to see happen here with the Build Back Better plans?
I'm hoping for better wages, paid time off, and more support. We need better training and definitely higher wages.
Is the United States in kind of a reckoning time right now for the conditions for working people?
Yeah, we are. This is a time where we actually have to take bold initiative and take risks. We have the funds available. We have over $400 billion to make this happen. It's just a matter of them pushing forward and making it happen now.
In terms of support for being a frontline worker, what's some things that would really help you be supported in that work?
I believe that one of the things we need is definitely better training. We need paid time off, sick leave, for people want to come to work. The better initiatives that we get, the more people that will show up. Not only that, we need mental health and better health care.
Hi, my name is Caroline Nutter. I'm a tax policy analyst at the Colorado Fiscal Institute. So I'm part of the Fund Our Futures Coalition, which is a coalition of progressive organizations that are really looking to make sure that this recovery builds back in the way that it should. And what I am doing as the Colorado Fiscal Institute's representative is making sure that we're paying for all of these priorities and that we can afford all of these priorities, which we can if we raise the taxes on the wealthiest and corporations and make sure that everyone is paying their fair share.
One of the perhaps expected and visible results of the pandemic is record profits for certain corporate entities.
Yes, that's one of the primary things that we're trying to address with this plan. So 650 billionaires actually, they increased their profits by 50% during the pandemic. And what we're really trying to address with various kinds of taxes, I'm not going to bore you, it's sort of elaborate and complicated, but with income taxes and wealth taxes, is to make sure that these billionaires and these corporations that profited so much during the pandemic are giving back to the people that really suffered.
So the Build Back Better proposal looks to invest in infrastructure, but you're saying this can't be done in the form of an unfunded mandate.
Exactly. So we don't want to go further into debt. We don't want to increase the national deficit. We want everything in this plan to be paid for, and it can be paid for if we do these wealth and income tax increases that we were talking about.
What do you think would be some of the direct results?
Well, I think that taxes would increase on wealthy people and corporations, and we would use that revenue to fund things like housing, food programs, health care, all these kinds of things. It's a huge plan. It's really exciting.
Build back better! Build back better! Build back better! Build back better!
Temperatures in Denver have been breaking records repeatedly this summer. The 100-degree temperature reached yesterday surpassed a 145-year-old record and marked the fifth time this year temperatures in the Mile High City reached the triple digits. Listeners know we usually close the headline segment by giving the current temperatures outside our Boulder studios. And that temperature is usually slightly lower than the one in Denver. One of the reasons for that is a phenomenon known as urban heat islands. Geoscientist Dr. Chandana Mitra explains how it works.
So what happens is when we replace the natural surfaces, the meadows, the forests, and the fields with stone and concrete, they do nothing but trap and store all of the heat which is emitted from all these surfaces. And that's the reason why urban areas or cities are a few degrees hotter than the surrounding vegetated rural area. To give you a better perspective, say, for example, we were not having this online, this particular meeting, and we were all cramped up into a room. And say, now I know it's 120, but say 100 people, and 300 watts is the minimum around what we emit, each one of us. And so around 30,000 watts of heat just because of us being in a room. So if we translate that knowledge and talk about cities, think of, say, thousands of people, in some cases, millions of people in cities doing their job, going around cars, buildings, and the amount of heat the city generates. So that's the reason why over the city, a bubble, a heat bubble occurs, which is different from what the surrounding environment is. And this phenomena of a heat bubble is also referred to as a heat island, urban heat island. Now, in a very simple way, if I explain to you what heat islands are, so it is just the difference between the temperature of downtown city area with the rural neighboring outside of the urban areas. That's what urban heat islands are. Urban heat intensity is difference between temperature of downtown and the rural areas. So generally, an average is between 3 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit. But of course, in cities like Phoenix, on any given summer day, it could go up to 15 to 22 degrees.
Unlike Denver, Boulder has a green belt incorporated into its urban planning. And while the green belt is often cited as a reason for higher housing costs in Boulder, it does seem to keep temperatures cooler than in the state capital. And if you'd like to take advantage of those cooler temperatures in Boulder while enjoying the performing arts, there's an option for that this evening. Boulder Arts Outdoors is now in its second year. The initiative was created as a way to keep the performing arts alive during the pandemic. It originally staged arts events in a drive-through format with audiences staying in cars. But now, with high vaccination rates in Boulder, the event has moved to an in-person but outdoor series at the Boulder Bandshell. KGNU's Rosana Longo better spoke with the event's founder, Mara Driscoll, a professional dancer originally from Boulder.
When the pandemic hit, I lost my platforms of work in New York, and I came back to Boulder, and I saw everything closed down here and thought, hey, there has to be a way to keep the performing arts alive, because I saw it as a moment when performance was more important than ever. First of all, because the community was suffering so much with COVID-19, but then also we were at the height of Black Lives Matter and all of the election political division. It was just a very difficult time, and I saw it as a time when we really needed the arts. So I founded Boulder Arts Outdoors, and we did 2 drive-in series. And the drive-in series were about making the performing arts possible during the COVID-19 pandemic, but they were really also about creating a platform for many different artistic voices in the community, to bring many different communities and styles together as one, and many different audiences together. And after the series, I received feedback from artists and audiences that, hey, this is a really important addition to the Boulder arts scene. We want this to continue. So this year, with all the vaccines and being able to open up, we are doing a 6-week series every Thursday for 6 weeks at the Bandshell downtown. We don't have to be in our cars anymore. The performances are all multidisciplinary, mixed bills, many different kinds of music, dance, physical theater, juggling. We have food, we have drinks, and it's just a celebration of that we can be together again and that we have this really vibrant arts community around us. So I'm so excited to be doing it and to be working with 30 different artist groups.
And you had a beautiful opening because you had Commissioner Marta Loachamin opening your stage and welcoming and allowing people to feel welcome in Boulder. Please tell us about this first scene that you were able to bring together artists from different ethnicities, and also to bring the importance of art, especially for minorities, because let me tell you, I always say that the Latino community, the Latinx community shines when we talk about art.
We had a fantastic opening on Thursday, and it really meant a lot to me, to many of the audience members and the artists, to have Marta Luchimin introducing the series and welcoming audiences. A major priority for this platform is to create a space for different voices and to bring many diverse communities together through the arts. I've been working with a number of local arts organizers, arts leaders, who have deep ties to different arts communities to program the series. So really creating relationships across maybe communities that don't always have relationships with one another. That's an important part of this. For our first performance, we had Los Mocochetes. They are a Chicano funk band. They are fantastic. Everyone was up dancing, enjoying being able to be together, dancing again after this year. We also had Edgar L. Page from Denver. He really works with traditions of Black modern dance and giving voice to that legacy. We had a wonderful samba performance. The Bateria Alegria percussionists and the Bella Diva samba dancers. So much energy, so fun, so wonderful. And that's really just the beginning. We have a really diverse spread of artists for every single one of these performances that run through August 26th.
Is the artsy community maybe thinking about the need to really establish a sense of unity, like a union that will protect them against crisis we will have to face in life?
Artists have always, maybe not always, but for a long time, struggled to have stable work, to have platforms where they feel seen and heard and safe. And so I think that it's the time when a lot of people are thinking about that even more, just because work was so impacted by the pandemic and there weren't protections available for artists during that time. So when we rebuild our arts platforms, I think a lot of us are trying to think, how can we do this differently? We don't need to just go back to exactly what we were doing before the pandemic, because in many ways that wasn't ideal. Those platforms were not as adaptable. They weren't as inclusive. In some ways, they weren't as interesting. So how can we take this really, really challenging circumstance and use it to imagine new things, to grow, to improve the arts in Boulder?
Boulder Arts Outdoors is also making an effort to provide access to these events. I know that you are also allowing people to pay what they can afford. Can you explain that also?
Definitely. The organization has really considered, okay, what is a fair and accessible price for a general admission ticket? We've taken into account, okay, you know, most people in Boulder, many people in Boulder, what do we think they can afford? And what can we ask of them? Because that's how we are supporting the artists on the stage. That said, we want this to be something that everyone can come to. We don't want ticket price to be a barrier for anyone. So we have a very wide range of promotional codes and special ticket prices. And then we're also partnering with organizations that work with adults with disabilities, people in the lower income community, kids and whatnot, making sure that there are tickets that are available, that are accessible, so that everyone can come.
Mara Driscoll with Boulder Arts Outdoors. She's talking with me about the series now feature every Thursday afternoon at the Bandshell in Boulder. Is there something else that you would like to tell the audience?
I just want to invite the audience to come to the shows. We're so excited to be here. We are presenting 30 different artist groups. We have locally distilled spirits. We have food. We have community classes before the shows. we're just excited to be here doing this work and to be able to be together again.
That was Mara Driscoll of Boulder Arts Outdoors speaking with KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better. Their next event is tonight at 7 p.m. at the Bandshell.